Ediard took the tall bridge beside Hypool, the one with the crystal apex. On this night the transparency made no difference. It looked like he was walking on some glossy black substance smeared by slush. It brought him out into the empty streets of Erie, which he hurried through on his way to the Zelda district. He hadn't planned on coming this far, but if everyone knew he was meeting the girls there, he should at least appear to be on his way in case he was being observed. Part of him was still aghast that the city knew about his love life, though he accepted he really only had himself to blame. It was strange that none of his friends had mentioned it. Did they assume he knew? That was the problem with not growing up in the city. Everyone took it for granted he was familiar with the culture. Once he was over Grove Canal, the buildings changed to a warren of modest houses and shops and craft halls. The walls closed in as he deliberately chose a route that took him down the narrowest streets. In Polterel Alley, he was completely alone. It was a tiny passageway between the backs of buildings, a zigzag that was barely one person wide. Indeed, there were alcoves in the walls to allow people to pass, given their slightly strange inward bulge, a couple of feet above the ground. He could only speculate what the city's original inhabitants had looked like. At night, nobody used it. The thick walls prevented anyone from using farsight along its length, and it effectively blocked long talk. If you were mugged in here, no one would know until morning. Ediard sent his farsight out ahead of him, checking the alcoves were all empty. When he was halfway along, he stopped under an overhanging section of wall and wove a concealment around himself. Once he was sure no one was following him, he asked Macathran's somnolent mind to allow him passage once more. It was easier for him now. After that first time behind the shops in Sonral Street, he'd taken to practicing in secluded spots like this one. There were many in the city. The pavement under his feet changed, producing a subliminal swirl of coloured symbols. Ediard's feet sank through it, as if it had no more substance than fog. Some force lowered him gently into the drain fissure, running beneath the buildings. As always, he felt as if he was plummeting from a great height. Ediard walked for several minutes until the drain opened out, halfway up the curving wall of the big tunnel, which ran directly underneath the Grand Major Canal. He placed his feet tentatively on the little steps he'd asked the city to create down the wall. Even so, with the water gurgling over his boots, it was a treacherous descent. His previous explorations had revealed that Macathran's entire canal network was duplicated down here in the city's hidden underworld, not that he'd ever walked their length. The crest of the main tunnel glowed with a faint tangerine light, showing him the stream which ran along the bottom. It was higher than usual tonight, indicating how much water was dripping out of the pavement slush and into the drains. A ledge allowed him to walk beside it, though he had to splash across the broad circular pools of the junctions. Water poured in over the tops of his boots. It was freezing. Not for the first time, he wondered if he could somehow bring a little boat down here. In the end, he settled for using his third hand to hold the water back from his shins. He'd found that doing the whole water walker trick and stabilizing the surface was too exhausting to maintain for any length of time. Eventually, he turned off down the tunnel below the upper tail canal. After a few hundred yards, he scrambled his way up into another drain. He wasn't terribly familiar with the Myco district, but his farsight could easily penetrate the city's substance now. To his mind, it was as if the structure around him was built from nothing more than cloudy glass. He stopped below a secluded corner of a little square, and the city lifted him up, elevating him out into the thickening snowfall. By the time he emerged, he'd cloaked himself in a concealment again. A couple of sailors in their traditional magenta-colored half-cloaks walked through the square, oblivious to him. He grinned at their backs and set off in the opposite direction. The House of Blue Petals fronted the upper tail canal, looking directly across the warehouse domes of the port. A four-story establishment with a vermiculated facade, the oval window surrounded by onyx-like anthemian friezes. Protruding from the upper slope of its mansard roof were several hemispherical windows, as if it had grown giant eyes to peer up at the nebulas of Quarentia's skies. Ediard frowned up at them, puzzled by the faint violet glow that emanated from within. It had been a long time since he'd seen anything other than Macathran's ubiquitous orange glow at night. The three tall doorways of the ground floor were all open. The sound of piano music was spilling out into the street, accompanied by laughter and loud voices. Doormen in black jackets, similar to constable tunics, stood on either side of each heavy wooden door. Ediard held his breath and slipped past them, watching anxiously to see if they could sense him. One of them frowned, looking round at some phantom disturbance, but didn't raise any challenge. Half of the ground floor was a bar, with the piano in the middle hammering out a jolly tune. Smartly dressed stewards mixed cocktails behind a long polished counter, which groomed G-monkeys delivered. Polished tables were accompanied by high-backed leather armchairs where the customers relaxed with a drink as they waited for the madam to come round. Two big black iron stoves on opposite sides threw out a comforting heat as coal blazed away behind their grills. The room was a high one, taking up two floors, with a wooden gallery running round it. Girls with strangely stiff, curly hair leaned over the railing, wearing low-cut, brightly colored dresses, grinning at the men below as they made eye contact and blew kisses and made saucy, long-talk calls. Ediard watched the wide wooden stairs which had been fixed to the wall, seeing who was coming up and down. It wasn't just sailors who visited Ival's establishment. Judging by the clothes, a large proportion were men from the guilds and families. He even saw a couple of militia officers in their sharp blue and scarlet uniforms. No constables, though. Probably can't afford it. He waited, getting a feel for the routine and probing about with his farsight. The madam would go from table to table, sharing a few pleasant words with the clientele. There would be a brief discussion about the girls, some requesting an old favorite, some taking their pick from the gallery. A fee was either handed over discreetly or, for regulars, an addition made to their account, and as soon as the man had finished his drink he'd go upstairs to be greeted by the courtesan he'd chosen. After a couple of minutes standing near the foot of the stairs, Ediard followed a carpentry guildsman up to the gallery. The selected courtesan flounced along to throw her arms round the guildsman in welcome. They headed off down one of the side corridors. Ediard hurried past the other girls, startled by how strong their perfume was, which made him worry he might sneeze. Then he was wiggling through an archway shielded by curtains. That was the most difficult part, trying to disguise the motion of the thick red velvet. On the other side was an unembellished corridor leading back to stairs which took him up to the third floor. He'd sensed the layout of the rooms up there, with over 30 people gathered in groups. Ival was easy enough to discern. Ediard wasn't going to forget his mind in a hurry. Ediard didn't bother with the door. Opening it unseen would be impossible. Instead, he asked the city to change a section of the wall and ghosted his way through. The gangmaster was holding court in a long room at the end of the building. Four of the grandiose oval windows looked out eastwards to the Lyot Sea. Tonight, they were covered by thick curtains. A green enamel stove burnt hot in the corner, making Ediard wish he wasn't wearing his coat. Nobody else in the room was. Ival's grey shirt was unbuttoned, showing off a thick mat of hair on his chest. His boots were off, resting against the side of the deep-cushioned leather settee he was lounging on. Seven other men were in attendance. Their fine clothes emphasized the illusion of them belonging to some grand family or merchant house. It was an image Ediard couldn't get rid of, as if they'd somehow established a guild for their criminality and enjoyed the same benefits as any of Macathran's legitimate enterprises. When he'd first learned of the gangs, he'd assumed they'd consist of sour-faced men in shabby clothes meeting furtively in dark underground rooms. Not this. There was a table along one wall, with gold and silver platters laden with food, every bit as delicious as that served in a lily-light restaurant. It complemented a selection of wine from estates Ediard had never even heard of. Three girls were walking round with bottles, filling up the cut crystal goblets held by the men. They were wearing long, diaphanous skirts and simple suede slippers. Nothing else. Ediard stared, feeling mildly guilty, as if he deliberately snuck into their bedroom. "Lady, you stupid country boy, what did you think girls would wear in a place like this?" Then he really looked at them. Two were the girls who'd accompanied Ivar to the court this morning. The third. Ediard couldn't help the little groan of dismay which escaped his throat. Luckily, the men didn't hear him over their own conversation. It was Nanit, the dancer Maxen had brought back to his maisonette the night before the ambush at Birmingham Pool. Now that was scary. Ivar clearly operated at a level which had completely eluded Ediard. This room was the right setting for the gangmaster after all. He was smart and sophisticated, with money and an unseen influence that extended a great deal further than Ediard liked to think about. Ediard had come here in the hope of overhearing a few incriminating conversations. Now he knew that Ivar wasn't going to be removed simply by a couple of well-planned arrests and some raids. If he was going to do this, to take out Ivar and ruin the gangs, he was going to have to sharpen up his own act considerably. He would have to learn how Ivar functioned, where his interests lay, who his friends were. With a depressing sensation, Ediard guessed that the gangmaster could never have grown to this stature without help from the city's establishment. One thing at a time. He strengthened his concealment and settled down to listen. It snowed the day after New Year, big soft flakes sliding down out of a grey sky, deadening the sound of the city. Ediard bathed early, then ate a decent breakfast of scrambled eggs and grilled bacon, with some slices of Orkby black pudding thrown in the frying pan, along with his mushrooms. He was pretty certain he wasn't going to get any lunch today. When he dressed, he made sure his new thickened dross silk waistcoat was fastened properly, then added a pair of dross silk under trousers as well. There could well be a lot of resistance from the gang members during the raid, and he knew over half of them were armed with pistols. He went out onto the walkway to finish his mug of tea, looking down onto the pool in the central oval courtyard. Snowflakes sank silently into the still surface as strands of vapor rose up. The water was too warm to freeze, but not warm enough for any of the kids to swim in. Ediard had thought about increasing the pool's temperature, as he'd done with his own maisonette, but once again he'd resisted for fear of drawing attention to his ability. Boyd and Dinlay came along the walkway, their cheeks flushed by the cold air. Dinlay, as always, was immaculately turned out, with a regulation knee-length coat exactly the same color as his tunic. Even the silver buttons were the same size and shape. Boyd had chosen a brown leather greatcoat, quilted on the inside. Ediard had admired it so much, he'd gone to the same shop in Kobara District to get himself one. "Everything okay?" Dinlay asked anxiously. Since his return to duties 2 months ago, he'd been working hard to prove himself to his squadmates. Too keen, really, but they'd all gritted their teeth and waited until he lost his manic edge. Ediard was praying to the lady that this raid would make him feel like a full part of the team again, and he had one last trick to make that a reality. No movement. The G-Eagles have been watching the street all night. Trukal and Harawald are still inside. Lian is with his girlfriend in Sampaloc.
What about Ivar?
Where he always is, Ediard said. He was actually surprised by how little Ivar ventured out of the House of Blue Petals, but then anyone he wanted to see responded quickly to his summons. There were grand council masters who didn't command that much respect. On the plus side, that made it a lot easier for Ediard to keep watch on his opponent. By now he knew the House of Blue Petals better than any building in Macathran, except Jeevan's station. For the last 2 weeks he'd eavesdropped on the plans for their robbery in Vaji District. It was audacious and impressive, breaking into the Chemistry Guild yard during New Year's Eve and stealing their stockpile of platinum ingots. The planning was meticulous, using over 20 gang members and 4 gondoliers. They'd gathered guard rosters, bribed a couple of guild members to leave certain doors open, used girls to make sure other strategic people were away from their posts. They even staged a fight in a tavern to occupy constables from Vaji Station. What could be more natural than a drunken brawl on New Year's Eve? Once he'd learned all that, the real maneuvering game began. Ediard told the squads under his command that he'd got a source in Ivar's gang and there was a robbery being arranged. That took less than a day to get back to the gangmaster, and the resulting friction and suspicion it unleashed among otherwise trusted lieutenants was a joy to behold. Then Ediard convinced Ronark to allow the robbery to go ahead, promising his source had revealed the hideaway where the ingots were to be stashed. That was where the constable's raid should take place, he insisted, after they'd let the gang think they'd got away with it, and hopefully luring out senior gang members to the hideaway as they began to fence the platinum to unscrupulous merchants and loose-model jewelers. After that, Ival called in Trukal and Lian to announce a slight change of plan that only the three of them would know about. Etiad almost laughed out loud as they quietly plotted their reverse deception. After all, the deceit and counter-trickery was starting to muddle his head, but this wasn't about the robbery anymore. This was him and Ival going head-on. Watching Ival from within his concealment, he could see his adversary knew that too. Kansine and Maxen arrived outside Etiad's maisonette. They looked eager. "No hangover?" Etiad inquired lightly. "Not from last night," Maxen said. "I have an example to set to the rest of your squads. I was in bed by 9 o'clock with a cup of hot chocolate." He winked at Boyd. "Alasul knows how to make really good chocolate." Kansine wrinkled up her nose. "Lady, preserve us from your ego." "Let's go," Etiad told them. When they got to the Jeevan station, the two other squads that were under Ediard's command were already waiting for them in the small hall. Everybody was sharing the same anticipatory glow. Droal and Ural, the squad leaders, both saluted, which Etiad returned scrupulously. He was doing his best not to direct any attention towards Vilby.
"Everything all right?" Ural asked.
He was a couple of years older than Etiad, a third son from a smithy in the Kobara district. Strictly speaking, he'd been due promotion, though he never showed any resentment towards Etiad for making corporal first.
"They haven't moved," Etiad assured everyone in the hall. "Chase team has been observing them all night. The ingots are there waiting for us, and we've identified 17 gang members involved. The courts are going to be very busy this afternoon."
Captain Ronark led another three squads into the small hall.
"Ready to go?" he asked.
"Yes, sir,"
Etiad said.
"Here's your weapons certificate,"
the station commander said, handing over a small parchment with his official seal.
"I've just long talked with the commanders of Neff and Belis stations. They're reserving some squads to assist with the arrests. Good move, that. Don't want to put their noses out of joint."
"Thank you, sir."
Etiad looked up as probationary constable Felax hurried into the room. The lad was only 17. He joined up just after Birmingham Pool, along with 20 others. Che claimed his life was now a nightmare trying to train so many worthless screw-ups. Privately, of course, he was loving it.
"Or the warrant signed, sir," Felax said. "Judge Solby says good luck."
Etiad put the warrants into his pocket without looking at them. "You can stay with us for today. We'll need runners."
"Thank you, sir,"
Felax said worshipfully.
"Okay, your attention, please," Etiad said, stepping up on a bench. "The ingots taken from the Chemistry Guild are sitting underneath a house in Whitemire Street in Sampaloc. They're being guarded by 5 or 6 armed gang members. However, we expect more gang members to arrive this morning to begin distributing them to dodgy merchants across the city. Keeping the ingots in one place is risky for them, so we need to move in after those carriers arrive and before they leave. That will give us the maximum amount of people to arrest. Once we have recovered the ingots, we'll also be arresting everyone involved in the crime. But I have to stress we need the ingots as evidence. The first time I was in court with Arminel taught me that."
A ripple of laughter went round the room.
"We have 3 G-Eagles and 10 G-Hounds from this station as backup, and in addition we'll have a number of other squads from Belis and Neff. We know some of the gang members are armed, which is why we're being issued with pistols, but please, only use them as a last resort. I don't want any casualties. This is a big operation, and it's going to send a very loud New Year message from us constables to the gangs that this is going to be their last year in Macathran."
Maxon and Dinlay led the applause and whistles.
"It's going to be total chaos," Maxon said as they made their way down the Grand Major Canal on a gondola.
Another 4 gondolas were following them, carrying the rest of the squads.
"Why?" Dinlay demanded irately. "Etiad has done a great job organizing this."
"Oh yeah? Who has responsibility when we arrive? The squads from Belis and Neff are going to want to grab the credit, and they'll be led by sergeants."
"No disrespect, Etiad," but there are too many constables involved. The squads aren't used to working as a big team.
I know, Ediard said. He sat back happily in the gondola and smiled up at the sky. It had stopped snowing, with the clouds starting to clear. Strong fingers of winter sunlight were stabbing down to glare on the snow-clad buildings of the city. With people starting to return to work after their New Year holiday, Macathran had an air of clean expectation. He liked that.
What are you up to? Kansine asked suspiciously. Actually, it's a lot worse than Maxon says, Ediard said cheerfully. He glanced back at the gondolier, who was trying not to show too much obvious interest, and leaned forward to whisper to his friends. The gang knows we're coming.
How?
Boyd asked.
My source told me.
In fact, the link was a simple one. 3 nights each week Vilby paid a visit to a private room in the Black Horse Tavern where Nanit was waiting for him.
Who in the lady's name is this source? Maxon demanded. Everything we've done these last weeks is governed by what they've told us. You.
Can't tell you.
Ediard hadn't quite summoned up the courage to tell Maxon. Of course, Maxon probably wouldn't even remember Nanit.
Maxon growled and slumped back.
So what do we do?
Dinlay asked.
Use their arrogance against them.
The squads from Belis and Neff were waiting on the bridge by mid-pool. Ediard's gondola pulled into a mooring platform, and he got off to consult with the two sergeants in charge. Maxon had been right. Their eagerness was palpable. Ediard knew they wouldn't follow his polite request to coordinate with him. It would end up in a rush to make the arrests. He took out a map and showed them where the suspect house was in Whitemire Street, and they agreed to a pincer movement with their squads going through Folas Park, while Ediard took his across Myco, so they could converge on the hideaway from opposite sides. If the gang members did sense them coming, they'd still be trapped. Ediard's gondola carried on down Great Major Canal, with Belis on one side and Sampaloc on the other. The difference was pronounced. Along the canal, the cylindrical buildings of Belis were roofed by long, twisting spires. Cup-like Juliet balconies bulged out of the walls as if they'd sagged open. Sampaloc was made up from big tenements, not dissimilar to the one Ediard lived in, except these were 3 or 4 times the size, and the maisonettes were smaller. Families here were packed in tight. The broad streets circling the tenements were cluttered with rubbish. The district's G-Monkey sanitation teams seemed unable to cope. It was worse than Ashwell had been, and that would be a good starting point, Ediard thought. Improve basic living conditions, give people higher expectations. So why doesn't the district master do something? As if reflecting their surroundings, the residents close to the canal stared sullenly at the gondoliers carrying the constables. They spat into the water and made obscene gestures. A few third hands nudged at the little craft. Gangs of kids jeered when they saw the uniforms.
Little buggers, Boyd grunted.
They need to be shown a different way, Ediard said. That's all.
Too late, Maxon said. This is what they know. It's the way life has lived here. You can't change it.
Ediard stared at the skyline of sturdy, uninspiring buildings, thinking how he could improve them, the new forms and functions he could shape.
Don't be too sure, he whispered.
Kansine gave him a curious look, but said nothing. They all disembarked at first pool and made their way into Myco. It was strange for Ediard, seeing it in daylight for once. Nothing like as shabby as its neighbour. The small district was occupied predominantly by the families of fishermen and shipbuilders, with a large guild presence. They had a much stronger sense of community. Pride, Maxon called it.
News for you?
Chase directed Long Talk informed Ediard as they walked down Maley Street, not far from the House of Blue Petals.
What?
You're not going to believe who's just turned up to examine the ingots.
Who?
The good Captain Ivarl himself.
The squad members close to Ediard started grinning, hungry with anticipation.
That makes sense, Ediard replied.
Lady, we've got him,
Boyd told the others, giving them a broad thumbs up.
What do you mean?
Che asked.
He's come to gloat, Ediard told him.
His own farsight showed him the squads from Belis and Neff hurrying through Folas Park. As expected,
They already crossed into Sampaloc via the bridge over Trade Route Canal, which put them a lot closer to the hideaway than Ediard. They'd arrive a good 10 minutes early.
"What are you thinking?" Cansine asked shrewdly.
Ediard halted the squads and beckoned Felax forward. He handed an envelope over to the young probationary constable. "I want you to go directly to the house in Whitemire Street and deliver this to the sergeants from the other squads." The lad saluted.
"Yes, sir, Walter Walker."
"Quick as you can now," Ediard said. He instructed one of the G-Eagles to keep watch on the lad as he started running.
"What's happening?"
Maxon demanded. "Slight change of plan," Ediard announced. "Follow me, please." He turned off down Camden Avenue, which was lined with winter-flowering jackrail trees, whose sky-blue puffball flowers were just budding. Water dripped off the encrustations of snow on their overhanging branches. There were a lot of whispers and long-talk queries behind him, which he ignored. They were heading away from Sampaloc now. The avenue led straight to the Upper Tail Canal, which bordered the port district.
"Dinley," Ediard called, "take Ural's squad and split off down the next alley."
He held up the map so only his friend could see it. "That's the building we want. You come at it from this side," his finger indicated. "Make sure no one leaves. Remember to watch the windows and the roof."
"What's in there?" Dinley asked.
Ediard leant forward so his lips were almost touching Dinley's ear.
"The ingots."
The switch had been made with considerable precision in the middle of the night. As the gondolas loaded with ingots made their way back from the chemistry guild yard to the safety of Sampaloc, they passed under several bridges along Roseway Canal, including the broad stone and iron archway at the end of Abad's Royal Boulevard, which led over to Nighthouse District. It took precision timing, but Ival made sure that another gondola was going in the opposite direction at exactly the same time. For a few seconds the gondolas were out of direct view of the G-Eagles, which the constables were using to observe them. The solid bridge structure made farsight difficult, especially when the gondolas were surrounded by a seclusion haze. Identical boxes were thrown between the gondolas. Ediard had to admire how smoothly they'd managed it. What Ival hadn't taken into account was for Ediard to know the plan in its entirety, and be using the sight of a G-cat swimming idly under the bridge. Grandmaster Finnerton had been happy to help, loaning Ediard 15 of the Genistars, so he could position several under each bridge. Once Ediard had confirmed the switch had been made, it was easy for him to track the new gondolas as they took a long route back round to Myco, where they landed the boxes at a slipway. Ival's men carried the boxes into a fisherman's warehouse.
"Oh dear,"
Che's sardonic long talk reverberated round Ediard's squads.
"Captain Ival seems to be upset about something."
His gifted sight showed the gangmaster rushing out of the house in Sampaloc, his face red, almost running. Several of his lieutenants were following, their expressions anxious. Ediard grinned at the warehouse, 20 yards ahead now. The big doors were open, showing a gloomy interior filled with barrels. Several fishermen and women were sitting outside, mending nets. More nets were hung up in great loops inside, drying off. "Seal it up," Ediard told his squads. The people working on the nets looked up in alarm as the constables appeared. G-Eagles swooped low, keeping a keen eye on the slipway leading into the warehouse. G-Hounds growled in warning.
"Please remain where you are," Ediard announced. "I have a warrant to search the premises."
Dinley and two constables blocked one of the fishermen who tried to sprint away. "Cansine, take Maxon and Droal inside. Have a scan round for me, please. You might want to check the cellars."
"You sneaky beast," she muttered, grinning as she went into the warehouse.
Then Ediard's farsight caught someone running down the slipway on the other side of the warehouse. He jumped off the side of the canal, holding the surface of the water firm as he landed. It held his weight, with only a slight dint under each foot, as he ran round to the slipway. People on the other side of the wide canal stopped and stared. Fingers were pointed. Cheers echoed across the icy water. Children called their friends to watch. "It was the Water Walker," they cried. "He's doing it again." Ediard arrived at the end of the slipway. Lian was there, trying to push a small dinghy into the water.
"Don't go," Ediard asked nicely. "We're only just getting started."
Lian was long talking, frantically. One hand went to the coat pocket with his pistol.
Ediard gave him a warning look. It didn't do Arminel any good, remember? Leon glared furiously but backed away from the boat, raising his hands. Joal came down the slipway behind him and removed the pistol before slapping on the handcuffs.
"What is going on?" demanded the sergeant from Bellis Station.
Ediard's farsight observed them arriving at the house in Sampaloc.
"We farsighted them moving the stolen items earlier," Ediard replied, keeping his mental tone level as he examined the dinghy. "Didn't have time to tell you. Sorry. My runner has a list for you. It has the names of everyone involved in the Chemical Guild robbery. Most of them live in the tenements close to the hideaway. Would you arrest them, please?"
He was aware of the callous humor shining out of Che's mind as the Bellis sergeant snatched the envelope from Felax.
"Oh, lady," Cansine exclaimed. "Ediard, you've got to see this."
"On my way," he said. The cellar under the warehouse was one of Ivar's clandestine stores. Ediard had only taken a fast sweep with his farsight a couple of days earlier for fear of attracting attention. He'd noted the crates, bottles, and sacks piled up in the three vaulting cellars underneath. There were a lot of them. Naxen and Jural began opening crates, finding an astonishing array of expensive silverware. Smaller boxes contained jewelry. The sacks held bales of raw dross silk. There were bags of tea and spices from provinces hundreds of miles along the coast. Bottles of fortified wines were stacked to the arching ceilings.
"It's going to take a week to list all this," Jural said in astonishment. They'd only opened the first few boxes in one cellar.
"Help's on its way," Ediard assured him.
By wonderful coincidence, Ronark arrived at the same time as Ivar. The Jeevan's captain led three gondolas carrying accountants from the Guild of Clerks, who had followed Ediard down the Great Major Canal at a leisurely pace. They moored to the slipway at the same time Ivar came hurtling out of Camden Avenue, out of breath and very, very angry.
"I forgot you said you lived around here," Ediard smiled at the gangmaster. "How nice to see you again."
Ivar glared at Ediard, then at the impassive Captain Ronark. His gold-topped cane was raised. He hesitated.
"Is there something we can do for you?"
Ediard asked as Dinlay and Cansine carried the first boxes of ingots out of the warehouse. Ivar's wild-eyed stare switched to the boxes with their precious contents.
"Would you like to retrieve something in here, perhaps?" Ediard continued.
"We'll need to see an invoice, of course. There are a great many items stored in the cellars. Strangely, the mayor's port inspectors have no record of them being landed at Macathran, and consequently no duty being paid. I'm sure the accountants will soon calculate how much is owed on them. Until then, they'll be placed in a city store. Perhaps someone will come forward to claim them and pay the tax."
A reluctant grin appeared on Ivar's face.
"You're good, Water Walker."
"Just doing my duty."
"But you have to be good the whole time, and good fortune is a fickle thing."
"Yes, I'm sure Tanamin will agree with that." It was two nights earlier when Ediard had listened to the sickening instructions Ivar had issued to Harrowald on the punishment to be given to Tanamin, who hadn't extorted enough money from his patch in Fiaker district. Ivar couldn't cover up the flash of surprise in his mind. When he did veil his emotions, he was regarding Ediard with the kind of caution reserved for a cornered fast fox.
"Yes, very good. I see that now. Are you sure you won't accept my hospitality? Together we can accomplish a great deal."
"There's not much to be accomplished from inside the Trampello mines."
"I see. That's a shame.
Was there anything else?"
"No, not today.